is in the ideas close by. And he said, you know, when he was when he was telling his Russian yeshiva that he was planning to go to college, they were very negative about it, and the kind of warnings that he heard were that there's a lot of prejudice on college campuses, kind of boys and girls hanging out in inappropriate ways. The teachers would teach things that would challenge his faith. And just, according to him, people were just doing nasty things everywhere in college. He got to the campus and found that those are not the problems. You know, when it comes to relations between men and women, you want to live a Orthodox lifestyle, there's no problem with that. The freshman year you get luck of the draw with roommates, everyone has that problem. So you try to find a roommate that's appropriate. But if you want to lead an appropriate life and not hang out with people in inappropriate ways, you can do it. That wasn't his issue. There is an issue of people losing their swim kind on college campuses, but he noticed, at least he says, that most of the kids that did that were already heading in that direction, and it wasn't the college experience that did it, it was something else that was already happening. He said that his biggest challenges were, first of all, was he prepared properly by the Torah community itself to meet the intellectual challenges, not from the teachers, it's not the issue, but actually from other students that he came in contact with, very articulate Christians and Muslims, and others, Hindus, Buddhists, who were not afraid of talking about their own religious faith, and he ultimately says he enjoyed those connections, but were we properly training our children to be able to talk about Jesus Christ in an informed way? Issues of biblical history, rabbinic history, these are issues that he struggles with on college campuses, and I don't think we do provide enough background to handle that properly. The time management became an issue, and he does say that he's learning less Gemara than he did. He's learning other things, but to keep up with learning Gemara at the pace that he was in yeshiva, he can't expect to do that. And that is a big challenge. I don't want to solve these. You know, it's a very interesting letter. You look at the letter yourself. The point is that we may be surprised at what we're expecting the problems to be on college campuses and what they actually are. There are challenges, without question. But it also can be a very enriching environment as well. I went to college, I went to grad school. For me, grad school was like a place mentorship. It was a choice before I saw it. It was a big school. So it was just learning Shabbos and Shabbos all the time. It was incredible. But that's not always the case in every college experience. And so this is a vital issue for all of us. It's a wrestle with it in an informed way is really important. And let's just add one more issue that I'm hearing more and more from our students as they come back, is that one of the biggest challenges they're getting is from Muslim students. And it's not talking here about reason debate, but actual harassment. I hear this at Harvard, I hear this in other schools as well. This has been a problem, and to be able to stand up against this is going to be one of our challenges over the next decade, certainly in college campuses. So there's certainly enough to talk about here, and we are really deeply honored to have Robert Schrader on very little sleep, but it's an honor to come and speak with us here. Another topic you want to say?
We'll be part of the discussion.
We'll be part of the discussion, and we'll all discuss this together.
Thank you, Mr. Ender, for meeting really for the first time. I think the first time she died in so many years. And thank you, Mr. Ender, for bringing me up. It's difficult to me sometimes to speak to a group that I don't really know and that I'm trying to connect to. I guess since you came to hear me speak, you're not a captive audience here. Perhaps that would be the connection. It must be that you want to hear what I have to say about this topic, so I'll I'll just start. And the 25 people sitting here right now, I can divide into two groups. There's a group of people who are approximately my age or a drop younger, who have children who are about to attend university one way or another. And then there's a second group of some younger people who are either attending university or about to attend university, who are thinking themselves about what they're going to do and how they're going to go about doing it. There's a tremendous gap between these two generations that I just mentioned. I grew up in what can be called the post-World War II generation. People who were born in the United States from parents who might also have been born in the United States but who experienced World War II, and many of whose friends had come over from Europe, and our level of comfort in the United States, we felt fine, but we knew about people who didn't. Certainly my parents, as American as they are, completely unaccented in every way, nevertheless were very conscious of the fact that they were Jews, that they were different, that they that there was something outsider about them within American society. The colleges that they went to, if they didn't go to Yeshiva College, and there was no Stern College at the time, growing up in New York City, were the city colleges. It was taken for granted. And it was almost considered silly to go anywhere else. If you could go to Brooklyn College, why would you want to go to Columbia? In Brooklyn, you don't have to pay. And the education was assumed to be equivalent. If it wasn't Brooklyn, it would be a city. And if you lived in Queens, which very few people did at the time, then you might have gone there. My sense is that similar situations around the country, basically people were local. The notion of a college student living away from home, if it wasn't going to be within the yeshiva context, almost didn't exist. It happened, and maybe there's some people here who are in such circumstances. But it was rare, it was the exception, and it certainly wasn't the norm. Our children are no longer that ilk. First of all, for whatever reason, perhaps because my own generation and even those somewhat younger than me are much wealthier than our parents were, it's taken for granted that you send your child to the best possible university that you can. And that usually means a private college. If it works out, an Ivy League university or something equivalent to it, such as Hopkins or Brandeis. It means that it's become taken for granted that part of the Orthodox American Jewish experience is to leave home. Something which was an exception at that time. If you're not going to go to an Ivy League or a private school, you're going to go to a big state school. And even if it's a big state school in your state, it's likely to be not walking distance or commuter distance from where you live. Because most Orthodox Jews don't live within commuter distance of Rutgers. And people who live in Boston and Sharon are not within community distance of UMass and Amherst. And you don't necessarily go to the state school of your state because all state schools are pretty inexpensive if that's an issue. You may feel more comfortable going to a different state for whatever reason, because of who knows what. It's not at all clear to me what makes a student go to this place or that place or the other place. But we know that they go anywhere and everywhere, and closeness to home is not only not an issue, it's something almost to be avoided. forget what happens, either to your children or to yourself, whoever it is I'm speaking to, whoever you are. You know, my mother went to public school, as did her three sisters. An Orthodox home. All four children came out Orthodox. It didn't happen to everybody, but this is not an uncommon story. Today, I'll bet anything that not one, or maybe only one, of all of you sitting here sent your children to public school. They all went to some Jewish day school, probably an Orthodox one, if not an Orthodox one, then a non-denominational Orthodox and Chaplain school. It's taken for granted as part of the course. Nobody goes to public school anymore. Everybody's getting a Jewish education from kindergarten. Kindergarten, the first through eighth. By and large, everyone's told that if you sent your child to public school after eighth grade, my father did go to yeshiva until eighth grade, but then he went to public school. No, that's unheard of. You go to yeshiva high school. Everybody goes to yeshiva high school. So they're again within Jewish context from 9th and 12th grade. Then, thank God, it's become also part of the course that you go and study in Israel for a year, maybe two. And at least the majority, in some places, I believe it's 80 or 90% of all the students, go on to study in Yeshiva or Midrashah in Eretz Yisrael. The glass bubble contains itself. From age 5 to age 19. And then what do? We pick them up, we give them a kind of a parachute, and then we drop them off somewhere. Wherever it might be. Today, 85% of yeshiva high school graduates attend secular universities. That's the figure that goes around and that no one has ever disputed me on. For high school in suburban New York, maybe it's not called suburban, SAR in Riverdale, I sat down with 1 year, it was exactly 85%. 15% go to yeshiva college, or Stern, or Sura, some other such equivalent. What? The shock that I assume that I've seen take place, if you have someone within a completely Jewish, by and large, it's fair to say, completely Torah context. I don't care whether the Orthodox gay school that your child goes to has their mixed boys and girls or separate boys and girls. They're in a completely insulated Torah atmosphere where it's taken for granted that everyone's davening shacharis and there's going to be a mincha tefila in the afternoon, and where the boys in the least oppressive of day schools, that they're being checked for cysts as they're growing up, and the girls are, you know, it's unheard of to wear pants in yeshiva high school. I'm not talking about that sensibility in life, it's not my issue. But the notion of what's new is, it's all there. And then suddenly, you send them off. After being in MMY, or Lindenbaum, or Yeshiva Hotel, here. Now do what you want. You don't say it. But in effect, that's what we're doing. We're taking them from, you know, dargah, from elementary school to yeshiva high school to yeshiva or seminary in the Gosha, and then we're putting them in a completely secular atmosphere. Alexander, you mentioned some things which are challenging, some things which are not challenging. The truth of the matter is, as far as I've experienced, that different students experience challenges in different ways. But certainly the most powerful challenge is that they're in a different world. On the one hand, it's the world that they grew up in. You know, they're very American. We are very American. I'm living in Eretz Yisrael 28 years. I'm still very American. And I'm American from the 70s, not from the 21st century. But we're all very American. We, 8 years ago already, an Orthodox Jew ran for vice president of the United States and won the popular vote. Certainly took this state by ransom. We're not outsiders anymore, at least we don't think we are. And of course we're going to go to the best and the finest and the biggest and the red, white, and blue. And it turns out that Penn and Brandeis and Champaign, Illinois and UCLA are not quite what Maimonides is. Not at all. You know, not everybody wears the yarmulke. And not everybody is Jewish. And even if you are Jewish, you're not committed. Not everybody wears tefillin every day. And not everybody keeps kosher. And the standards of tefillin are not the same. And whether you are tempted by these things or not tempted by these things, you are suddenly in a culture in which none of this is taken for granted. Please understand that we are one of the most insulated communities within the 50 states of the United States, by far. Yes, there are parochial schools for other religions as well, but it's not considered to be par for the course that everyone's going to go to them. Both Muslims and Christians and Catholics, by and large, have met other people, have socialized with them, are part of the wider society. We are not. We are not, and we are. We feel comfortable and we take for granted that comfort, and at the same time we're into ourselves. And then suddenly the student is placed in a context in which worlds open up, and I don't mean intellectual worlds. Yeshiva high schools in the United States are the finest high schools in the country. The intellectual worlds in terms of capacity of the high school student have opened up. And we all know there's more to study in college and whatever college you're going to go to. But suddenly there's a broadened shot there that has been opened, that is enticing, not even in the Yetzirah sense of that term, necessarily. Just look at all that's out there. Look at all those people. Look at the mindset. Look at the approach. Look at what's going on. It's pretty much like taking a fish and putting it out of water and telling it, you know, why don't you evolve into a land big and quicker. This is the situation. This is what has to be understood. And I can't imagine I told you anything you didn't know. I certainly didn't give you any facts that you weren't aware of. You all know that this is the case. It's a question of realizing that this is what we're doing, and this is what you're likely to continue to do, and that the question is what are we doing to prepare students for that, to sort of send their sort of ask before. Given that the preparation is over for students who are already on the brink of being there or are there already, what are we doing for them when they're there? That's a big question. I'll repeat the four things that Rabbi Sender said in terms of what's different. Ultimately, the first thing that I've been trying to emphasize is that the frame of reference in which they live is now a completely different frame of reference. The Jews are different kinds of Jews. The Goyim are real people, and they're not so terrible. They live in the very wall as well. The whole frame of reference is different. Difference number one. Difference number two, there are challenges to their religious beliefs. Of course, what those challenges are depend on how the religious beliefs have been presented up to that point. 2 years ago, I had a communication with a Rebbe in Yeshiva High School, not far from here, in which it became clear to me that the Rebbe found difficulty not taking the opening of Rakim's Bereshit very literally. I began to create a difficulty within a college context in which it becomes clear that that's just, even amongst religious people, that that's not the mindset at all. But more than that, the whole religious mindset of what's good for you about the world being a place where you're expected to be moral from a religious perspective. The notion of religiosity is, America is a very religious country. We all know that from reading the papers. You don't know that from going to college. College is the last bastion of secularity in the United States. And that's our place. Our meaning, that's where Jews like to go. And what we like to identify with. And we like to feel part of. And we want to feel part of that secularity, frankly. In other words, it's not just the question of biblical criticism, which is a serious matter, and of religious criticism, and moral criticism of religious people, which we have to make ourselves. But the basic assumptions of the social sciences is a counter-religious perspective. It's coming out all the time. Three. The term priestess sounds a little strong, but the norms of men and women in Orthodox society that's taken for granted, and also what's considered to be a break of that norms, is completely off the charts once you get to college. The kind of things that the Rebbeim in Yeshiva High School give Musar about are things that only the tzaddik can do within the college context. The whole mindset of what tzniut is, of what relations between men and women is completely different. What's taken for granted and what's not taken for granted. Certainly if you're from Yeshiva High School, as many of them are, which are not co-educational, even if you're from a co-educational one, it's the whole relationship and the notion of relations with boys and girls is completely different. It's different partially because they're younger. Of course, it's expected to be different in that way. And they're getting older. And they're thinking differently. But what's acceptable on a college campus is pretty much everything. And there is no such thing as something which is unacceptable, quite frankly. The most unacceptable thing one could imagine is not at all unacceptable. And it could be a challenge. It may not be a challenge for everyone, but it could certainly be a challenge. It could be a challenge in terms of meeting a very fine person of a different faith. not on earth. It could certainly be a challenge if you're meeting another Jew whose personal standards take for granted certain things that are unimaginable to the Torah observer. And then what it means to be a Torah observant Jew also changes. If any of you can just think for a minute your own change from going from the student world to the work world, in which my hope is that your religious practice didn't change, but things did change, things that you thought about yourself before, and you know, you thought you would continue within, I heard a story just in the past few weeks about Rabbi Darrell Wine, that the first day he started out as a lawyer after he, before he went into the rabbinate. The first day when he walked out of the house, his father told him, don't forget to daven mincha. He was shocked that his father said such a thing to him. By the way, I haven't daven right yet, and it's going to be a meeting afterwards. I would be happy. I shouldn't forget to daven mincha. Ola ala da'at, one can imagine that I don't forget to daven mincha. He took out the daven mincha, that's what I'm saying. Every goal line is the very least. It's not just a question of forgetting to daven mincha on occasion. The question is, what is the basic standard of what you expect from yourself? What is your standard of tshiva? What do you do when you wake up late for an important class? Are you going to daven the whole thing in Tamlaith? Are you going to daven a shortened version? The kind of things that you skipped in order to make tshiva the tshiva, suddenly you're going to be skipping in order to make class. Or are you going to do a kuchnanch when I say, or maybe just put on the tefillin and take it off and help the daven to another point, or, you know, God will be happy tomorrow. Just today, didn't they? And after how many times do you begin to feel inconsistent to the point of hypocrisy? The question of Israel that Rabbi Sender mentioned, which is perceived today as primarily a political issue, is a much more powerful problem, and it dates back to, I don't know when exactly, but today it's still assumed in American politics that Jews are supporters of Israel. Maybe it always will be that way. I'm not so certain. But even if it does remain that way always, there's not a shame. The naturality of the American identity of Orthodox Jews today, after Joe Lieberman if a black can be a president, and pretty much it's open to everybody, maybe even to women, then we're American. And if we're American, what does it mean that we support Israel? And especially since there is nobody who can live in Israel, and we decided if we have to live in America, what are we saying by that? And it's something that every individual makes a decision about, where every family, if it becomes politically incorrect, which it already is, again, specifically on the campus, in America at large, there's tremendous support for Israel, especially in the Christian right, which the Jewish people feel very uncomfortable with. So if support for Israel comes for those Christians in America whom we feel uncomfortable with, and with the frame of reference in which we feel comfortable being extremely anti-Israel, and that's what we feel quite American, then what is happening to our Jewish national identity? that Jewish national identity, which was so clear to the Rambam and to Rashi, and to Ravina and Ravashi, and to Rav Yosef Karo, and to the Ramah, and to the Baal Shem Tov, and to the Vilna Gaon, and to the Goyim who lived around them all, what is happening to our Jewish national identity now that it's frankly been confused because it's something called the State of Israel? And I believe it was Will Herbert's book, Protestant Catholic Jew. We're just part of the mosaic yet. If we could only be part of the mosaic. I heard Brother Jonathan Sacks speak in England about how he's quite a Zionist, and he feels strongly about it. And all across the country are Calvinist quo. But within his own context, they're in England. It's important that Judaism be respected, regardless of what people think about Israel. We're not that far from that here in the United States, you know. And because the kind of schools that you sent your children to, and you and I wouldn't think of doing anything otherwise, have been heavily Zionist, not only in a political sense, but in a religious sense. You do not Israel today is part of every modern Orthodox Jew's religious identity. When that's being politically challenged by the environment around you, it's not just a question of foreign policy. It's a question of what does that mean to me? I could sit down now and say I finished speaking. But all I've done is present problems. I can tell you what we've tried to do with the Jewish Learning Initiative on campus in order to deal with these things. Perhaps that's less important than hearing what you have to say and what you would like to comment about what I said or about things I didn't say. And, what we've done is in effect, it can be compared to Chabad, but Chabad is not what it used to be, and also never was something that on a personal basis of Messiah, and I think most of you would identify with us. We simply put Torah educators on campus, on as many campuses as possible, that will guide the students along during their college year, undergraduate and graduate as well. Today we're on 15 campuses. I'll mention them quickly. There are several other campuses that we ought to be on, maybe more than several. We said we can't be everywhere. I'm not saying that it solves all the problems, all the issues, all the difficulties, but what it's meant to do is create a subgroup within the campus where a modern Orthodox Jew doesn't feel compromised for being in university, but can feel at home within this religious context. There are religious contexts. We send couples who themselves are understanding and are sympathetic to the university situation. The goal is not to get them out. The goal is to help them there and to make things as good and as comfortable as possible, and to at least hear out the difficulties, to be friendly with them, to be influential with them, but not in a domineering way. To be a kind of father and mother, brother, sister, friend, personal example, and with that in mind, to help them through the college year. To take different campuses, there are many campuses of students who are very successful in organizing on their own. But we go to whatever campus we go to, start with where they're at, and help them move along. If they need more help in Tfilot, and we establish more Tfilot. They need more help in kosher food, and we try to work on that. If they need more shiurim, we try to work on that. If they need a bit medrash, we work on that. Very often relationships between the Orthodox community and the non-Orthodox community needs help. We try to work on that. And we try to be a personal resource to the both to the Orthodox and the non-Orthodox Jewish students on campus, with the goal regarding the Orthodox students to help them maintain themselves and advance them in Torah study and religious observance as much as possible. The goal for the non-observant or non-Orthodox student is simply to present true Torah Judaism in a way in which it is truly attractive, without making it look like anything other than what it really is, and to make it available to those who might be interested, to whatever extent they're interested, without any goal of cure. The goal of our couples is not to take a non-observant Jew and make them observant necessarily. If they do, that's wonderful. But the goal is simply to present Judaism, because no one here going to a secular campus or sending your child to a secular campus plans on sending them there as a missionary. That's not why you go to Harvard. It's not why you go to Penn. It's not why you go to UMass or Stanford or University of Texas, wherever you may go. You go to get an education. And we want to make sure that you can be a proper Jew within that context. It's by setting a proper example you can be behind the mitzvah v'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, that God should become beloved, as Rashi explains, as a result of your personal example in faith. But it doesn't have to be a conscious process of trying to pull people in. But I think there are many organizations that do that, as is well known. It's not what the Jewish Learning Initiative, besides Jewish Learning Initiative on campus, and the Orthodox even tries to do. Yes?
I just want to concur that I think where the child is coming from will continue to some degree at the college campus. You had mentioned when there's inconsistency, sometimes they look at it as hypocrisy. And if that has started in high school years, they may continue that in secular.
I mean, Joe Pollack tells the following story. This is coming from many of you who might know. Right? Person has sent a child to yeshiva all along and has now got to send him off to university. And the child, the boy in this case, packs his bags. And he puts his clothing in and he puts, loosely thin, and don't ask whatever else you take with you when you go to university, this teddy bear and that, whatever, And the father is waiting for the boy to put something in which he hasn't put in yet. And the boy says, okay, I'm back. And then the father says, what about yourself? The boy says, gee, that's a wonderful idea. And he passes, so. And I've heard Pollack put it, and I'm not so certain about what he said, but the father then realized, with 12 years of education, just gone down the drain. It is possible for a child to go through 12 years of yeshiva education and not be committed to Orthodox Judaism. Comes from an Orthodox home as well. I remember the first year we sent the Burmans, Rabbi Todd and Naomi Burmans, to Brandeis. There was a certain student coming from a certain seminary in Israel who, upon registering at Brandeis, made clear on her registration form that she did not plan on eating the kosher dining hall, the kosher part of the dining hall. Why this happens is something that has to be discussed, and it's not my topic tonight, and although I have what to say about it, you probably do also, and maybe more than me. But yes, if a child is not committed to Torah education before they go to university, then the likelihood of they're not committed to Torah before they go, the likelihood that they're going to keep it there is close to nil. And because, you know, there are people who become frum on campus, but they're not usually the yeshiva who graduates. Yes. I guess I'm in the middle. I'm just... if you have reason to be concerned about your own child, start now when you go home thinking about what you want to do about that. Because it's good that you should understand, and they should understand that you should understand. Lack of commitment isn't something the person is extremely aware of. You know, the Gemara talks about the Mumar the Teavon. There are plenty of people in the world who, given a choice, will eat kosher. But if there's no choice, what does the no choice mean? If no choice means skipping a meal, that might be what no choice means to someone. Then we'll eat not kosher. You didn't expect me to skip a meal, did you? There is no college student who's not going to be in such a situation at some point, where at some point, in order to keep kosher, they're going to have to skip a meal. Now, if their religious commitment does not advance beyond being the umumar l'teavon, then they will eat a non-kosher meal on one occasion. And that will be a momentous occasion in their life, the first time in their life that they'll be eating a non-kosher meal, if they do. And then they will ask themselves, what does that mean about me? Or the first time that they decide they're going to class is more important than davening. Or the first time that they decide in their life to touch a girl, or to do more than that, or to touch a boy, or to allow one to touch you, or whatever, or to date a non-Jew, or, you know, what it is in which the breaking of the water, so to speak, in this entry into American society of secularity, because what do you expect? Not that it's going to happen to everybody, but it could. And the realization that, well, I did something wrong, you know, there's Juba, there's Errol, there's Yom Kippur. Does that work? Does that sit? Does that feel? Or no, I'm in a different world now. It's a big question. I can't remember anything.
It
must be better.
I understand that someone's hearsight is fragile. It's an issue. So my question is based on the assumption that you're talking about someone who's, you described relatively strong. He's gone to a year or two of measures or seminary. 35 years ago or so, you were saying, I went to Columbia. At that time, I'm from a black hat, yeshiva at Columbia. And at that time, Columbia had plenty of priests. It had plenty of challenges from alien thought. It had plenty of the rainbow of different religions and all those things. And if you were from, you could, if you knew who you were, you could basically navigate that. And I thought that 35 years later, it was no worse. And then I started going to some classrooms and I sent some children. And I found that there's one ingredient that's there now that never was there before, or at least I wasn't aware of it. It used to be that you had a lot of choices all of a sudden open up to you, but you still could make the choices. Today, there is an orthodoxy, in quotes, about political correctness that leaves you feeling, leaves a child feeling, I think, like a pariah if they believe, for example, to give one example, and I don't mean to pick on this one, that homosexuality is not a perfectly wonderful lifestyle. You will be ostracized, not just by the students, by the teachers. You will be characterized as a nutless bag in the animal. There is such pressure and such intolerance that I don't recall from my day. My question is, if that assumption is correct, if I haven't misperceived that, how does one know when your child is strong enough to face up to that? Even if they could face up to the workday world, and they could face up to secularism, the workday world doesn't contain such incredible orthodoxy towards the PC that the colleges have today, at least that's my perception from what I've seen. So it's much worse than the workday world. How do you know when a child is ready for that versus steering them to why you were stern because you think it's the only safe place? If it even is. That's my question.
I don't have an answer to your question, what you're really asking. Each one of you or your child is going to have to decide where they belong. Whether they belong at Yeshiva College or Stern, whether they belong at a Columbia or a Maryland. Without knowing your child, I simply don't know the answer. And probably with knowing your child, I still won't know the answer.
Another question more generally.
I know one thing, though. If your child visits Yeshiva College, or Stern College, spends a day or two there, maybe a Shabbos, and comes back and saying, that's not for me. I think that they have to be believed. What would bring them to say that is not our topic tonight. But it could happen. If they then go to Maryland or Penn and say, yeah, that's for me, I think you have to trust them. Does that mean that we have nothing to worry about in terms of all the things you mentioned? No, not at all. You're absolutely right. The particular issue that you mentioned is unique and is especially true and is telling of all sorts of things and difficulties in our society. You said it's certainly correct. And that there's a political correctness within the Orthodox community as well, that at this point in time, the notion of homosexuality, male homosexuality, the Toeva, is something which is completely not understood. It can be understood as a hoax, if you can imagine such a thing. In our generation, what everyone understands it as being Toeva, it's understood. Today, it's a hoax, at best, or something which we have to be more tolerant of or understand or whatever. And yes, it's a watershed of all sorts of difficulties, absolutely. But that's not really where the problem is. It's a different issue. In each of your homes, each of you know what you raised your children to go to for college. Or maybe you were more open. It's also possible.
there are those of you whom, for whom it was understood that your child is going to go to yeshiva college or STEM college. You might tolerate something else, but that's the norm. There are those of you whom which it didn't even enter your minds or their minds that that would ever happen. Whether you did go there or whether you didn't go there. I know many people who went to yeshiva college whom they clearly brought up their children, whereas the yeshiva college is being outside of the realm. Now, yeah, you're going to be Orthodox at the best college possible. If you know that that's how you raise your child, then you can't wake up in 11th or 12th grade and say, you know, go to yeshiva college. Go to we have to understand that about ourselves. It's one of the disconnects of our generation somehow, that somehow we, at a certain point, expect certain things from our children that we did not give them, bringing them up. Somehow we thought the school would, or we thought that we weren't giving them, we weren't giving it to them. And in any case, I can tell you that without a doubt, there are students who will end up more religious by going to a strong religious university. What do I mean by that? A university with a strong Orthodox community who would not do as well as yeshiva college. Now, I'm not saying that's normal, that's the case, because no, it's certainly not true about everybody, maybe not about most people either. Let me say something else. You can divide the college campuses into four categories. There are the college campuses where the Orthodox community is the hundreds, anywhere between 200 and 400. In Maryland, you have more than 400. At Brandeis, you have more than 200. And you have a few of those. You have the Brandeis, Rutgers, Columbia, Maryland, Queens, certainly. I didn't realize that that was a consideration. Yeah. Those kind of places where you have several hundred is one kind of Orthodox community. Sometimes the students can go there and really their whole social lives can be with the Orthodox Jews. It's not impossible. Although most of them are not that way, frankly. Most of the students, even in those places, they're not completely cloistered within the Orthodox community. Then you have the Orthodox community, which numbers about 100. Michigan, Cornell, Harvard, a few other places like that, BU, where it's a heavy group, it's a significant group. You could call it for yourself, but it's very unlikely that you will, and you don't feel overwhelmed. You can get lost in the Orthodox community in the meantime, and it's not impossible. But these, you're not going to get lost, but it's a strong, but it's not overcome. Then you have the Orthodox community of about 20, 30 students. Yale, Princeton, University of Illinois, Champaign, where you can dive into the tefillah three times a day usually, although you might be the tenth if you're a man to make that meaning. And in all these places, the students are very part of the world around them, certainly the Jewish world around them and the wider world around them as well, without a shadow of a doubt. And then you have the places where basically there's no infrastructure, where there's a Hillel, but you're the only one there with the Yarmulke. I don't think anyone should go to the last category. Different children or youngsters or students do better in the other three kinds. There are those who need that mass. There are those who could use a strong group that doesn't have to be that kind of a mass. There are those who that could do very well being part of that small minion that can get together. Yes?
So I was looking at the schools, but there were not a lot of choices for the schools who did not get up. The ones who are good students, but they're not going to get me to the IE. And at that point, your choice of schools that have good or bad community in general is wrong.
I'm going to mention 15 campuses that Bezrat Hashem, it's my hope and intention, we should be on this coming academic year. And I'll go down to the East Coast and then, okay. Brandeis, University of Massachusetts Amherst, Harvard, Yale, NYU, which also has several hundred, Brooklyn College, which also has several hundred, but there's no Shabbos atmosphere at all. I don't think you should send your children there unless you have relatives in New York or something. Rutgers, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland, Cornell, University of Illinois-Champaign, UCLA, York, and Toronto. Those are the campuses we're at in the United States and Canada. I don't believe I left anything out. We were at BU until this year. It does not look like we're going to be there this year, unfortunately. I hope we'll be, nothing should go wrong with any of the other campuses that I just mentioned. The state schools that I mentioned are UCLA, University of Maryland, Rutgers, UMass Amherst. And University of Illinois Champaign. If you have four schools in which the major state school, we have a JLI campus at, that's, I mentioned the four states, University of Maryland in College Park, Rutgers in New Jersey, University of Massachusetts in Amherst in Massachusetts, and University of Illinois Champaign. Those are the four big state schools of those four states. UCLA is also a state school. It's not the biggest school, maybe it's the biggest, but certainly not the only. There are many state universities in California. Brooklyn College is also a public school, publicly funded. In terms of technically non-ID, it's not for me to rate any college. You can rate them yourselves. The campuses that we're at, which are private schools, but are not Ivy League schools, are NYU, Brandeis, and Johns Hopkins University. The Ivy Leagues that we'll be at are Harvard, Yale, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, Cornell, and York. York is also a public school in Canada. I don't know exactly what how Americans would go there, what kind of tuition they pay. So it's not as if every school that we're at, there is a significant Jewish community in each of these. In Maryland, you have over 400 Orthodox students. At Rutgers, you have about 200 Orthodox students. At UMass, you have something like 50, maybe 40, maybe even 30. Any year, it could change significantly. And Champaign, you have something between 20 and 30. UCLA, you have something like between 80 and 100. At least in terms of JLI campuses, that's the way it is. You're right. If you're not going to go to those schools, then you're sort of dropping them off in the middle of nowhere. But I don't see what someone shouldn't go to one of those schools given the choice. I think if a student can't get into any of those schools, then something should be done, absolutely. And, yes?
I'm not
going to
go to
UMass
and very well with community. And JLIC in the Rudiment. With the evolving economy in this country right now in society, UMass is becoming more of a realistic choice for a lot of people. And you said that you don't think that what JLIC does is perfect. I think it is. At UMass, you've given her the ability to bother every morning, 7 days a week. When I went to UMass, we had a choice between Hillel and Chabad House. Now, if the kids don't make a minion on Shabbos morning, they go to Chabad House, they make a minion, they all have a good time, and then they go back and have their Shabbos meal themselves. It's given her a place. She goes to study for the Chabusha on Sunday night. She's very involved with Hillel, and this has given her the ability to be a modern Orthodox Jew on campus, where it is very difficult, especially with everybody being so PC. But raising her and giving her my modernist education and then sending her in the direction of Lindenbaum, she's able to have that base and then go into a secular university where, in the workplace, I mentioned that in the workplace it's not very PC. In a lot of workplaces it's very PC. And there's a lot of pressure to be PC in the workplace. So while university is kind of like a microcosm of the real world, it does set them on the way to, many of the, we're raising our children on the Orthodox, so many of them are going to go into the regular world, into the secular world, and work, and contribute. And learning how to deal with this stuff at the college is invaluable. And being able to live in a secular community, but yet have a place to go to be modern Orthodox, is fantastic. And it's given them, all of them, just a great place to be. And I think it strengthens what we've taught them. And it strengthens their belief. And it enables them to go and deal with the PC and the choices. But even what UMass has come to in the last 30 years even shocked me, and I'm pretty liberal about things. The non-gender bathrooms and stuff, that really freaked me out. But, you know, it gives them a place to have their ideas and be able to live in that world. So.
You can imagine, I appreciate what you're saying very much.
I really, I can't tell you enough how much you've done for the kids on campus that you have.
Thank you.
And that's what I think that we should be going for, is getting a stronger modern Orthodox presence at more universities. We are raising our kids modern Orthodox, we're not raising them to be this, we're not raising them reform. So if we're going to do that, and giving them the choice of they're going to go to school, not necessarily, and you're right, not necessarily every kid can go to CERN or YU. There are all these choices out there, so if we strengthen the modern Orthodox presence on more campuses, then more campuses have a chance to become like Maryland, and having a chance, allowing the students to be able to live a modern Orthodox life within that school. And I think it's important, what you're doing is so unbelievably important, strengthening the modern Orthodox presence.
Thank you, and your encouragement is very important, and it would be good if many more people came to me with what the rudiments are doing at UMass, especially.
That's fantastic. Especially the way that they're educated in the second world also, which really bridges the gap for the kids.
So, our love is in the same thing. I'm going to have two children at UMass Amherst, Walt. So I'm looking forward to taking advantage of the program. What does your organization do with other Jewish organizations on campus? I can remember from my college days where I lived on a campus where there was strong Jewish presence, reasonably strong Orthodox presence, but it was not simply an Orthodox presence. There was a strong Zionist group on campus that played a very important role in terms of countering the anti-Israel groups that occasionally would try and stir things up. There were non-Orthodox groups on campus that, by and large, there was a great deal of cooperation with. What does your organization do with other Jewish organizations on campus? Do you actively coordinate? Do you actively interact with these other organizations? DSLO is ABYF, or I don't think it was the Hamas that you met him.
Jewish Learning Initiative on campus is part of Hillel in every campus in North America. We only go to a campus if we're invited by the Hillel director. We have a very strong and powerful and positive working relationship with international and national Hillel in Washington. That's not an issue at all. But the we will not go to a campus, and we've been criticized for this, but this is our policy. We won't go to a campus to compete with Hill. We only go at Hill's invitation. And both the husband and wife, our educated couple, are considered Hill staff members on every campus in North America. And we work with them, and we use their facilities. They can take credit for us and buy food stuff. And many of the Hills also participate to some extent in the salary of the charter educators, each one according to what else they do. Not all, most of them, many of them. That's in terms of Hillel. So we're part and parcel of Hillel, and we don't compete with them, and we work with them. In terms of Chabad, every Chabad is its own story. Every Shaliach is its own story. The goal is cooperation. Frequently we're successful. Once in a while we're not. And that's the situation. In terms of ABYS and many other not specifically religious organizations, Jewish organizations on campus, most of them are keyed in with the Hillel. And to that extent, they're keyed in with us as well. And it's not an issue. In terms of the Kiruv organizations on campus, we try to maintain a positive relationship, but we're not a Kiruv organization. That doesn't mean we don't deal with non-Orthodox Jews. We deal with non-Orthodox Jews all the time and on every campus. But we have not set out as a goal to make a non-Orthodox Jew Orthodox. And that's what sets us aside from the Kiruv organization. Yes?
I mentioned
that you
should
not do that
in front of us.
Right.
I'm coming from a different side, from across the ocean, from Yeshiva. Also, there's a problem with what you do. And you have a suggestion, a question, but a thought. Really, from things that have been discussed so far, students need a lot and more preparation for being on campus, both from the high school and from Yeshiva. And I'm curious whether GLI has gotten to that side of things more yet, since GLI has a lot of experience on the ground with what the issues are and the problems are and what would be helpful for students to come into it, in working with high schools. And also, from my Yeshiva side, I know that we at our Yeshiva do many different things to try to prepare our guys. We're going to secular campuses, but I also know that I would vote, and it's not true of all Yeshivas in Israel, but there are a number of Yeshivas and seminaries that would love to have a more active connection with JLI. I guess it's not realistic that all the JLI couples come to Israel and meet with us, or vice versa, but somehow have some meeting, I know there's been some things have been set up, but I think that in a more coordinated way, connecting between the Yeshivas and the Rabbanim Yeshivas and the JLI structure and couples would be very helpful.
Two parts to your question. It's in terms of the preparation. You're absolutely right. More should be done to prepare. More should be done by the Yeshiva High School. More should be done by the Yeshivot and the Mikrashot as well. In terms of the Yeshiva High Schools, part of the difficulty is that, and I'm not speaking about any particular school, and I don't really know what the situation is in the schools of this part of Massachusetts, but it's not a secret that a disproportionate number of Mechanchim are the, in modern Orthodox schools, are the Haredi orientation. I can't say exactly how many, or maybe it's not that case with me, I don't know. But it's known to be the case in many places. I'm not saying that all the problems in this regard will be solved if that were not so, or modern Orthodox, but the disconnect between the kind of Torah outlook that you might receive from a Rebbe who thinks that the Hasidic one shouldn't go to college, and again, if you go, you should certainly try to be as much not part of things as possible, something which almost never goes on, is probably counterproductive to the whole effort. Also, if the basic intellectual approach is that there is a terrible contradiction between the, not just the attitude, but the content of what's being studied. If biology and physics are apicursus, then if you feel that that's how you're ordained self, then you might experience difficulty when you're taking those courses very seriously, when no one seems to think for a moment about that's part of the difficulty in that. I don't know what can be done about that, or maybe it's not a problem here, I don't know. My attempt is that it's a problem here too. In terms of the yeshivot and midrashot, it's not a problem of Haredi youth, but there's an essential contradiction, and which is part of a wider thing that I'm mentioning in a minute. What are the midrashot and the yeshivot? You want to give the Talmud, the Talmudah, Kulo Torah for a year or for 2 years, right? You want to immerse them completely. They should be studying Gemara and Chumash and Luther and Hashkafa and they should like feel Kol Kulo Torah, right? It's basically a camel perspective on how to deal with things. The assumption that by giving that to the child, excuse me for calling him that, but for a year or 2 years, soak it up, and then they're supposed to live on that for the next 4 years. Maybe once in a while it works, but most people are not camels. So, what am I suggesting? That the yeshivot and the midrashot should be watered down. That they shouldn't be kulot Torah. That we fuse them with a certain amount of worldliness within this Torah context, so that when they actually go out into the world, I won't say they'll be coarsened or calloused already enough to deal with it, but actually prepared because it's part of their world. I guess I am, but I understand that that's counter to the whole hashkafa of all of these institutions, even Shiva has a great respect and regard for that issue amongst many others. And It doesn't sound right. No, we should be giving them more. I'm not saying we should be giving them less. But the realization that there's that the whole world is part of the Torah somehow. That Bereshit Bara Elokim et Hashamayim et Haaretz is all inclusive. It's something which doesn't come across. And this is the next point. I'll just give you an example from my own personal life. I was in the chaplaincy in the IDF during my reserve duty. The course I took for the chaplaincy, for the course of Rav Lutz Faith, was a wonderful course, and there were tremendous teachers in the faculty in preparing us what it was going to be like when we took on a company or a division, whatever it would be. And as wonderful as the course was, I can tell you that I walked into the booth completely unprepared for what I was going to experience. And it wasn't as if it hadn't been described to me. It had been described to me. despite the fact that it had been described to me, when it actually happened, I wasn't prepared. I don't know if this can be overcome. I don't know if you can keep someone in a bubble and tell them about everything that's going to be outside of the bubble and then expect that then now you take them out of the room and they'll know what to do. It could be that it just doesn't work that way. And it's not that I have to show them it's impossible to deal with. Most, I think, the majority, I hope it's a great majority, succeed in dealing with it nonetheless. But it's, the situation doesn't really allow for, unless you want to send them for a half year at this first, which, because we don't want to do, right? So that's it. You end up there anyway. So the problem is intrinsic to the situation.
I want to get a few words in group after 10 minutes and end. So, I just want to say, thank you very, very much for a little continued conversation. For a tremendously stimulating conversation already. I wanted to say, first of all, that Sharon specifically should be still invested in the JLI program. I'm proud, you should all be proud, that of the 15 JLI couples now, three of them are graduates of the Assembly of Midrash. Brandeis, Princeton, and Penn. So we should all take pride in that program. And I wanted to give the community the chance to appreciate the value of the work that's being done. And I felt when I had to speak at Amherst this year, just set up duration to speak, ready to speak at Princeton, hopefully at Penn. And one of the things that I'm really hoping that we'll look forward to is building an ongoing connection between the Central Mountain Torah leadership and JLI. I think that has a lot. So we have a lot to offer each other, and together we can build what all of you are talking about, which is a modern Orthodox community that really invests in the future of his children and the future of his community. I was realizing at the beginning of Rabbi Schroeder's talk, it would have been better if I had my wife here, because it's a really interesting perspective where I come. You know, I went to yeshiva day school, yeshiva high school, yeshiva college, yeshiva speaker. My wife went to public school, and I grew up in a university town. I stayed home through the end of speech, and my wife still makes fun of me for this. We have those conversations about our kids, you know, when our kids go away for college, and I look at her and say, what? Go away for college, and that generational shift is really evident. But one of the things that we keep discussing is, in my day school assumption, and that Urbana, Illinois, with 10 from kids, right, from pretty much everybody, is still pretty halakhically observant, and most of the vast majority were still identified Orthodox, and what that says about our paradigm. I wanted to put out three frameworks that really matter to me for thinking about this program educationally. Three questions that we should be asking ourselves about how we educate our children, and that our children should be asking themselves about who they are. One is, do we educate for religious choice or against it? And that to me is probably the fundamental question that has to be asked at every educational level. Is our goal to educate in such a way that our students will never experience the option of not being who they are religiously? That requires keeping them in the bubble for a lifetime. And that's a model. Now, we can say the Lefatchila model is one in which students never have the choice. If we don't have that model, if we see it as an educational aim for students to make a choice to be from, they have to acknowledge that the first time they have that choice is going to be a certain amount of attrition. And we have to just be willing to deal with that. We have to be willing to deal with the notion of drift and figure out whether the time in which we evaluate the effectiveness of our education is while they're adolescents or when 25 or it's getting late and I want to turn it back to Rabbi Schroeder, so I'm not going to take questions in the middle. That's a very important question, and I think that Rabbi Schroeder mentioned also, often when we talk about the attrition that takes place on college campuses today, and this is also in the student's letter that you all have, which I thought was beautiful, and I don't agree with everything in it, often the shock that high schools and day schools have about attrition on campuses is because of their failure to know their students when they graduate. If the students have already made choices not to be friends, which only come out, or that they have, they've been in Yeshiva for 14 years, but they have no parents, that in fact they're killing. Right? They didn't do their show on Sunday either while they were in day school, just nobody knows. That's one question, and I think it's a really important educational question, which can be answered both ways. Is the goal of education to educate against choice, right, or for the right choice? A second parallel question is whether we want to educate students to believe that the peak of their religiosity takes place when they're 18, and everything afterwards is downhill. Right, and that's the camel model I'm sure you're talking about. That, right, we're going to put you in yeshiva, and you'll never have a religious experience at the same depth that you have in yeshiva, because you'll never get to learn Torah all the time again. Right, and the rest of life is just the rest of life is always going to be the other. Now, there are different ways in which one could respond to that. When I'm in a polemical mode, the way I respond to that is by pointing out that Rabbi Akiva says, Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodeshim. And therefore, to say that religious experience should peak at a point when we believe students should have had no erotic experience whatsoever, and we educate them against any sensibility of eroticism, is clearly not in keeping with what religious tradition, what our tradition sees as religiously ideal. But I think that's in a polemical mode. I think it's a general question as to how we educate students so they see their whole lives as the trajectory upward, which is the trajectory downward. If we model it, the only way you can have a peak religious experience is in yeshiva, then we have a problem in any kind of religious growth arc. I think that responding to the question about how we can prepare, so I would say that we just spent 5 weeks in this community learning as intensive as the midrash as you can imagine. The students will all tell you it was the most intense experience of their lives, and yet we spent learning Torah the entire day, but we also brought in journalists and professors and all that, and that was just part of Torah. I think we could do that. But part of that is to create, right, because I think we can do it because we do it. But I think that part of it is just modeling, trying to model religious life in which, you know, you see a broadening of your experience as a deepening of your religiosity. The third question, and this is really, really central to who we are as non-Orthodox Jews, is whether we see it as a goal to produce a religiosity which is capable of surviving contact with the outside world. So that we see it as a goal to produce a religiosity which is capable of withstanding contact with the outside world. Meaning that even if we could create a hermetically sealed bubble, which worked, would we want to? Right, on the simplest issue where people may think the answer is obviously yes, right, if we could create a world in which students never had to confront issues about biblical history or religious history or anything like that. With no Orthodox Jew ever had to think about those questions, would that be better? If we produced a world in which no Orthodox Jew ever had to think about the question of whether sexual orientation raises a moral problem. Now in that, I want to make one last point, and then I want to turn it back to Rabbi Schroeder because that's why I brought him in, so you can, right, sooner you can have the conversation with him. I think that one underlying issue, which may actually be one of the issues underlying the generational shift that several of you have talked about, is whether students have a sustainable perception of the ethical superiority of Orthodox Jews. Orthodox Jews is a separate question. But Orthodox Jews. I think that my students later somewhat underrate the importance of sexual temptation, but again, I didn't go to a secular campus. I think that in my experience as sort of the pre-JMI fellow at Harvard, was that really probably the most serious religious challenge was meeting people who weren't from at all, and yet struck you as better people, and whom you could not say to yourself convincingly, if they were from, they would be better. If they were right, if they had a Jewish conception of God, they would be better. And that's a really, that's a really serious challenge. If we want a true religiosity that survives contact with the outside world, then we have to find some way in which you can answer that question. Is the purpose to produce better people, and so we're failing to succeed that? Are there really better people just who can't appreciate it? Answer in that regard. And so that to me is a really powerful communal challenge. Think about, how can we, what is it that we want our students to go out believing about the community with which they want them to identify, which will survive contact with other people, really good people, because I don't think the solution to the issue, to the yeshiva prep problem is to make yeshiva less intense. I don't think that the solution to the problem of whether people find being Orthodox ethically powerful is to make sure that we succeed in crossing the rest of the world. We could try that. Right? It might work better. Like, you know, the Frankist plan for bringing the ship, like creating a Dorsha cooler up. It works better than trying to create the best possible generation. But I think that's a challenge that we have to meet before we send kids. Right now, and often what we're saying is we can't do that, so we can't send kids out. If we send kids out, then we'll recognize that there are really, really powerfully good Reformed Jews and Muslims. And they can't throw out it religiously, so let's not do it. Right, that strikes me as, you know, the bad thing. And the better solution is to figure out a way in which we can produce the community that our kids really want to be part of, even though they've seen the option. That's the end of my thing. Thank you again. No way I can turn it after a show.
Thank you. I have a question. You want to say
something? Well, I was in fact just interacting with a couple of colleges, and I went to work in the college, right? One thing that really shocked me, I think, was more frankly, not only the colored bathrooms, the colored seats. One university license last week, the students have the option of a college roommate starting sophomore year. And we call it all fresh, but I don't think 19-year-olds should be living together. It seems like a really unhealthy thing based on how I remember boyfriend and girlfriend forming up and breaking up in high school. If you ask, if you have any, you have, single text forms, single text forms, they have one or two, such things. They're actually, that's where the Muslims and Jews tend to get along the best, because they're both the same thing. That's one thing. I don't know if there's a way to push for that the universities can go back to, there were some good things back in the old days, and maybe having more single text options. But I will say, on a positive side, my majority in college has been able to find many of the friends are not Jewish, but they have very similar values and respect each other's religions, and are not going to parties and doing the things that college kids are known to do until they go to the university. She was found a separate, she found a little bubble, I guess, within the university.
Are you the daughter that your father is speaking of? I'm not sure. Let me just say one thing. We should
go to
Question University. Yeah. Part of the reason they held it in this campus, and they certainly did in my day.
Hi.
I think it would be completely pointless to try to influence the United States in that way. The population of Orthodox Jews within the campuses where we're at in significant numbers is minuscule.
Not just Orthodox Jews, I mean healthy in general.
Not just Orthodox Jews who want to stick with that storm, too, those of them want to sell up quickly, not just by Orthodox Jews, the few that are on campus.
There are only two possibilities. One is that there are far fewer people who want these things than you're suggesting. And the other is that actually there are quite a few, at least more than are receiving it, and that the universities are working against it, which I'm also open to that possibility. Either way, I don't think we stand a chance by trying to impact them. We're not going to make, if you want to send your children to Liberty College, that might be Jerry Falwell. The kind of schools you want to send your children to. The kind of universities you probably want to send your children to have values that openly and explicitly contradict the values in which you've been raising it. Now, not the educational intellectual values, the moral, personal, family values, right? I mentioned the word family values, and I'm already identified as being with the wrong party, probably. And I don't vote in American elections. So that has to be understood. And I don't expect that once we understand it, we'll stop sending our children there, frankly. But if we don't realize that that's the case, I mean, I didn't read this book, but what I imagine to be there in William Buckley's God, Man, and Yale, or something, there's such a book written by Bill Buckley.
God and Man at Yale.
God and Man at Yale. In which, he was clearly brought up in a home in which he was taken for granted that he would go to an outstanding American university. And when he got there, he found that the moral philosophy or religious philosophy that was preached there was counter to what he had been raised with. That's our situation exactly. We're just a different religion. And I'm not saying that that's about to change, but we had better realize it, because if we don't, then we're fooling ourselves. And people do have a strong tendency to fool themselves. Yes?
I think that parents who are raising their children with the expectation that they will go to secular universities and work in the secular world need to start talking about them long before they're leaving home to go to Israel to go to college, about what the challenges are of being a college Jew in the secular world. Role play, give an example that you said you can talk about all you want, some of the things living it, but I think they shouldn't be surprised. I think we have to teach our children what it is to be who they are and tell them what the challenges are they're going to face. These are the morals that you're going to come up against, which are contrary to what you believe in. This is what people are going to be living in access. This is what they're going to be saying. Be prepared to hear this and know how you feel and what you're going to say in terms of acting situations. Be called up to parents before they're showing you home to talk about these things, if this is their expectation of where they're going.
I think you're right. And I also think that parents who do that, to the extent that you're suggesting they did, and maybe you have, I don't know, might start hearing themselves and question whether this all makes sense. It's easier said than done, and then going ahead with it. That's all I'm saying.
I just wanted to say something
I read
here before I had children, I had seven fears. Mm-hmm. And now I have seven children and no fears. Every child is different and unique. And you have to specifically assign unique things to each situation and each child.
You're certainly right.
I think maybe we should
Let me make sure you get some of that. Mine is very hard.
If I can just say one more thing. I'm the director of the post-college program at Nishmat. And if any of you have any children or friends or yourself, and some of them might want to study after college at a midrashah, which is open to people who have a broad perspective on the world, but certainly the manager of his commitment should consider Nishmat very seriously.
Thank you.